60 Hertz.
Hello and welcome to Anger Management. This time, quite in the moment, what's happening. It's Sunday afternoon in Cambridge. We're here with Art Goldhammer. Karin is here too.
Yes, I'm here. I'm doing the technology, so I'm a little shaken by that.
And it's the afternoon, it's the evening of the French presidential election. Everybody who asked in Cambridge who to talk to said it's Art, translator and academic of long standing. And we're here to talk about the outcome of the election. And I guess, as always, this I think is a very particular moment for the podcast as well, because in a way
it's the first time we're live.
No, because it's quintessentially about our dissent, I think, this election, in a strange way.
Yours and mine. Yes.
About either protecting something that might be able to evolve and change or reform something, or the question how should you attack it? And I'm not saying I would have voted Le Pen. Not at all, but the way that the discussion was framed was so defensive in a way, and so interestingly defensive and so symbolic. So I'm interested in that dimension to understand what's your take on. So Macron won 65%. We're all glad, but whose victory is it really? And what will happen with this victory? Where does he go with it? And where will the contradictions, will they just disappear that brought him to power and 35% of the French to vote for a xenophobe proto-fascist party?
Right. Well, I think the first victor in this election is the European Union, because if Le Pen had won, she had promised that she would hold a referendum on Frexit immediately after winning. She did backtrack somewhat on that promise in the last couple of weeks, and that may be one of the reasons that she did less well even than the polls had predicted. Originally, the polls had suggested she might get as high as 40%. She got only 35%. Macron, of all 11 candidates who were running in this election, was the most staunchly pro-EU from the beginning. So the European Union won. Second, I think the both the German right wing and the German left wing are happy about this election. There were endorsements from Merkel and Schäuble on the right and from Gabriel on the left. Scholz endorsed Hamon, but I think that's because they're both members of the Socialist International Organization. So he didn't really have a choice, but I think his preference would have been Macron, with whom he worked closely when he was at the European Parliament. Mm-hmm. So the Germans are happy. I think the Germans being happy is significant for Macron's chances of success, because he needs help from Germany if he's to make good on his election. He needs to bring some improvement to the French economy. It can't go on with 10% unemployment, or there will be trouble. Now, there are also already signs that there is likely to be trouble ahead for Macron. For one thing, the abstention rate this year was higher than normal. It was 25%, whereas in previous elections, participation has been at the level of 80% or so, so down about 5% this year. Then on top of that, there was a substantial number of spoiled and blank ballots. About 13% of those who voted cast the spoiled or blank ballots. That's unusually high. So if you add the abstention and the spoiled ballots, that's a significant segment of the electorate, in addition to those who voted for Le Pen, who were expressing discontent with the choices that they had. So the forces that supported Le Pen were in part from outside France. Inside France, you have people supporting him for two reasons. First of all, there's a substantial centrist vote. I've thought for a long time that someone in the center of the political spectrum could win in France. It almost happened in 2007 when François Bayrou came in third, and between the two rounds, Ségolène Royal and Bayrou had some discussions, perhaps at arm's length, about forming a ticket that she would name him as prime minister. And so you would have had a left-wing president, but a centrist prime minister, and that would have been a move toward the center. The Socialist Party itself has been moving toward the center for a long time, and Hollande and Valls really represent the kind of centrist wing of the Socialist Party.
Center being a really weird word, in a way, because it's so neutral, and that's I think, maybe the core of my argument with words. So is the center the center, or is the center, did the socialists move right? Did the socialists sort of betray, like you could argue the social democrats or the democrats in the US, their constituency? Is that sort of the reason why Le Pen got the voters sort of the industrial north, which were usually traditionally socialist voters or communist voters, and so I'm trying sort of, well, in this election to gouge out the contradictions of the present moment, and is sort of, is the it's not a normal election, but is it an earthquake, or is it sort of the end of something, or the beginning of something new, the Sixth Republic that Mélenchon wanted, is it already here, because it's like it's tabula rasa basically in France.
Well,
that's not a question, so.
Yes, I think with the upcoming legislative elections, you're going to see that the political system has been thrown into complete turmoil by this election. So in that sense, it's perhaps not quite a tabula rasa. The established parties, socialists and Republicans, have not been destroyed, but they do have to rebuild. They're in terrible organizational turmoil. And we'll see how they confront the legislatives. When I use the word centrist, it's in part to avoid using the term neoliberal, which is a label that's often applied to Macron and that I find unsatisfactory.
I agree with that. This is an argument we had just on the way here. George would argue that he is a neoliberal, and I would say he's a social democrat of the kind of more to the center.
Yeah,
which is not the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing, and I totally agree with avoiding the word neoliberal, because if you use that word, everybody thinks either they know what you talk about, or you sort of wishy-wash a whole set of contradictions. And I think that's the moment now to unpack the contradictions of the neoliberal moment that we live through, because it's really weird that you have victims of a system like the financial crisis, arguably produced, or the neoliberal era produced stagnation, indebtedness, the middle class, wage stagnation, growth stagnation. So why would you opt for somebody who is at least to a large degree part of that same thinking?
Right. Well, the reason I don't like the word neoliberal is that for me it's like Hegel's remark about the night in which all cows are black. It just eliminates all distinctions among different types of people who, to one extent or another, accept the need for a free market economy. I think when there was a robust idea of socialism, it was one thing to be against capitalism. But now that the socialist idea has been diminished, and no one can really imagine an alternative to capitalism per se, that you have to accept some...
No one is at large.
Yeah.
It's a very strong statement. There's a lack of imagination.
Perhaps an overly strong statement, but we have only 45 minutes here, so I'll allow myself to be somewhat crude.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, I have been fighting back against the use of the term neoliberal. So you mentioned the idea of third way, and Macron has often been compared to Tony Blair, for example. So yes, in some ways that's the direction he's going, but he has the advantage of having seen the ways in which Tony Blair succeeded and Tony Blair failed. Bill Clinton succeeded and Bill Clinton failed. So I think he's going to try some different things. France did not make the turn that the UK and the US made in the 1980s. So he's starting from an economy that is still heavily statist. 57% of French GDP goes into state spending. So it's hardly correct to say that France has become a neoliberal society in which the state plays a small role. What Macron wants to see is a reorientation of the French economy into new, hopefully growing sectors, taking advantage of France's comparative advantages. France has a very good educational system. It has very good scientific research. It's a leader in several areas of high technology, such as aircraft construction, aircraft electronics, chemicals, pharmaceuticals. Where it can compete effectively any longer is in heavy industries like steel and automobile manufacturing. It has not responded in the way that Germany has. Germany's automobile industry outsourced heavily to Eastern European countries with lower wage structures, so that it can still assemble automobiles in Germany, but using parts that are produced elsewhere at lower costs. France hasn't been able to do that, at least not yet. And Macron would rather encourage a new economy. Now, some people say this is a move toward the gig economy. The Uberization of France is a term that Marine Le Pen used in debate. I think that's quite unfair. What Macron has in mind is something more like Silicon Valley in the United States, where it's easier for entrepreneurs to start new businesses. And the businesses that they start are businesses where employees are, by and large, happier in their work than they are in working for large mass production corporations. So the question is whether you can foster the growth of such industries rapidly enough to absorb the jobs that are going to be lost in the heavy industries. The answer is probably no.
The answer is clearly no.
Yes.
I think that's what everybody agrees.
Everybody agrees.
Yeah. So you have to figure out, I think, a new role for the state, maybe. So is the state really the problem?
But this is what he wants the state to do. I mean, this is the role of a role of the state that he wants the state to play. But you mean more than that? That's what you're saying?
Yeah, it seems unclear. But that's I guess, the interesting part. So is the state active in a new way? So if you have an industrial policy that is working towards new knowledge-based areas of the economy, what's the role of the state in that area? And that worked in France with Airbus really well in a way. So to have a European,
right,
strong European technology, and I guess with the crisis in this country, in the United States, you can argue that there has to be a very proactive industrial policy in the future industries in Europe. If that's the case, I'm all for that. But is that the case?
Yes, I think he's very much in favor of industrial policy. But the problem is that you can't have Keynesianism in one country. That's the lesson that French socialists believe they learned in 1981 from Mitterrand. The country that has the budget surplus to spend, and the current account surplus that needs to be brought down is Germany.
It's you, George.
I'm all for spending, yeah.
So Macron thinks that the way to encourage the Germans to spend is to show them that they have a reliable, trustworthy partner in France. And therefore, he has been clear he's not going to allow the French budget deficit to balloon. I think the Germans never trusted Hollande for the reason that Hollande ran against them, in a sense, in 2012. You mentioned earlier that he had made promises that he then reneged on, and I think that is one of the reasons that the French turned against him so sharply and dramatically. His popularity rating had dropped to 4%, which is unheard of in the entire history of the Fifth Republic. So Macron avoided that mistake. He never pretended to be anything other than what he is. A centrist, or if you like, neoliberal reformer, who is going to expand opportunities for free market entrepreneurs in France. That's the way he's going to go, but he's going to expand those opportunities by encouraging a European-wide investment bank to be more handsomely capitalized by the Germans than it has been to date.
I'm interested in, I want to come back to policy, obviously, but I'm interested in how you see his mandate. because you said that this is a vote for Europe, or and he was the most pro-EU candidate, but this is also a vote primarily, I would argue, just looking at the poll today, against Le Pen.
Absolutely.
So it's a protest vote, and going back to the comparison with Blair and Clinton, they had a real mandate for their actual policies.
They
and
did.
I'm not so sure about Macron and whether people actually like the things he wants to do and what that in that case means.
Yes, that's a very good point. And I think we saw in the high abstention rate and in the surge of Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who was quite outspoken in his critique of Macron's policies and his assertion that they would not be effective. I think what you saw there was a protest. So Macron does not have a positive mandate yet. Hence, the success of his policy is going to depend not only on the Germans, but on his ability to convince the substantial segment of the French population that did not vote for him and that honestly rejected him with their abstentions because they could not bring themselves to vote for Le Pen. But they were the reason they abstained or spoiled their ballots was to say, we don't like you. We don't accept your policies. He's going to have to persuade them that those are going to work. Now, I'm not at all sure how successful he'll be in that. I don't want to be overly Pollyanna-ish about this. And I have my serious doubts. But Macron did something very interesting last Thursday night, one day before the news blackout was imposed on French media. He gave an interview to Mediapart, the online French newspaper, which is quite left-wing. And he agreed to sit down with them for 3 hours of discussion. And what you saw there was the debate that he should have had with Le Pen, but couldn't, because Le Pen was so aggressive and angry and shouted throughout their debate that no policy issues could be discussed. Instead, here you had well-informed left-wing journalists who are highly critical of Macron, who had published many articles criticizing his platform throughout the campaign, sitting down with him. And he agreed to do this. He didn't have to. Subjected himself to their questions. And he was superb, I thought, in this interview. You might say that that's because he's glib. He's an ENARC, a graduate of the École Nationale d'Administration, which trains people to do this kind of policy explanation in a very convincing way, which doesn't mean that he'll fare as well with the unions. But my sense in watching this interview was that you could visibly see the people in the room being won over, if not convinced by his policies, at least persuaded that this is a reasonable guy, someone you can talk to. This was evident in his responses, his humor, his body language. He was not a focus group-driven candidate. He was not wooden in the way that Hillary Clinton was accused of being wooden in the United States. He's someone who listens to people who pose questions to him and then responds in what seems to be a human way, which acknowledges the kinds of difficulties that they're putting forward, the obstacles that lie in the way of the programs that he wants to institute, and recognizes that he hasn't won over a large number of people in the population. You saw the same thing when he went to Amiens and confronted the striking workers at Whirlpool. He didn't persuade them. In fact, he didn't try to tell them he was going to save their jobs. He told them that, I can't stop this factory from being closed. It's owned by private owners, and I'm not going to tell you I'll nationalize it because that's not the way I see the economy going forward. So he may prove to be a skillful enough politician to pull this off, but there are no guarantees that that will happen.
I guess the standard left-wing critique or the standard left-wing doubt about Macron is whether basically, the question that Georg started out with, so what does he have to give to the people who are who already feel left out, who already are the victims of globalization, of this disrupted economy, of new, of the policies that Europe have lived with for the last decades? What is his answer? And what are your thoughts about what will happen 5 years from now if he are not able to give people something real?
Yes, well, I think what they most want is jobs, a reduction in the unemployment rate. There are some signs that the French economy has begun to recover slowly, admittedly, but it's a positive sign. He can't create large numbers of jobs yeah. by opening new plants. We've already discussed the reasons why the kinds of heavy industry that have closed down in France in recent years are not going to come back. Now, you made the point earlier that the working class did not vote in the North and Northeast did not vote for Macron. That's true, but that's not because Macron is a centrist neoliberal. The working class has been abandoning the Socialist Party for years, and the Front National has been the leading working class party in France for years. Now, the fact is that if Marine Le Pen had won, she couldn't have brought back their jobs either. Her formula was withdraw from the European Union, close the borders, raise tariff barriers. It's essentially the Donald Trump solution. Yeah. And the U.S. economy is... it wouldn't have worked in the U.S. either, but the U.S. economy at least has a large domestic market. France does not. It depends on the European Union for its large market and economies of scale. So she had no answer. Now, whether Macron has an answer, I think you're both right in casting doubt on the kinds of answers that he's given so far. And the law that bears his name, the Macron law, which tried some timid steps in the direction that he's suggesting now under Hollande, I criticized at the time for being far too little. This is not going to make a huge difference to have intercity bus competition, for example, or opening up the competition among notaries. This is not going to create huge numbers of jobs. We don't know. There are a lot of ifs. And you ask what will happen in 2022 if he does not succeed.
Yeah, who knows?
It's really far too early to tell. What we saw today is that Marine Le Pen just announced that she's going to dissolve the Front National and create a new party, the Patriots Party, which indicates that I think she's worried that her performance, which fell short of expectations, is going to open her up to challenge within her own party. And I think she's looking to form a new alliance. She got a beginning of that new alliance with the adhesion of Dupont-Aignan to her campaign at the last minute. So she wants to pick off a segment of the people who voted for Fillon, the right wing of the Republican Party. And I think perhaps she's going to be challenged within what used to be the Front National by her niece, Marion Maréchal Le Pen. So that it makes it even murkier what might happen in 2022. There's going to be a total realignment, I think, of the French party system. The Socialist Party is in complete disarray. The right wing could split between some segment of the Republican Party. The Juppé fraction will join Macron. The Fillon faction will join Le Pen, or parts of it will. The Sarkozy faction will, who knows, try to maneuver in between. There's going to be an explosion and a reconstruction. I don't know what will come out of that.
So in the upcoming elections,
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Kind of decide Macron's fate in terms of if he's able to build a working majority
right.
for his policies in the assembly. So what do you think, what are the what are the ways forward for him in the short term?
Well,
I know this is not. I know you want to talk about.
No, it's
I just
the
want
big
to,
picture.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll briefly address this. I think the likelihood, unfortunately, is that the lion's share of the seats will go to the Republican Party. And you saw François Baroin in the immediate debate that occurred on television right after the election results were announced. There were a number of socialist leaders on the platform with him, Ségolène Royal and Gérard Collomb, the mayor of Lyon, who were both Macron supporters, who were suggesting some kind of alliance between En Marche, Macron's group, and the socialists. So they'll try to get something together. But Baroin, instead of indicating he wanted to work with Macron, went immediately on the attack and said, Macron is going to drift to the left. We of the right reject him. And we're so I think Baroin and Wauquiez are going to vie for the leadership of the right over this. And Wauquiez is going to veer toward the Front National. Mm-hmm. Baroin will try to stay a little bit in between the Juppé group and the harder core right. We'll see which one of them emerges as the most likely leader of the party. There are some polls suggesting that En Marche, this new group that Macron has formed, could actually win a substantial number of seats despite having no established presence. If that happens, Macron will be in a stronger position. But at the moment, I think the most likely thing is that not a majority, but a substantial plurality will belong to the right. And that will mean Macron has to deal with whoever emerges on the right. I don't know what the terms of that negotiation will be. It's really hard to imagine at this point.
I don't want to insist on the big picture necessarily, but I would like to try to tie together some of the things that you said that I think make this election sort of particularly for France and still explain maybe the international and fundamental interest in some of the political propositions that were sort of at stake here. So you have, you say the victor is the winner is the EU, and that is a product of after Second World War. You say the French education system is very good. Having studied in Paris, I'm wary of that, but very precisely, I think one of the problems that was clear in the regime of Hollande and in Fillon's scandal and in the sort of the way the French ruling class behaves is that this educational system where they come from, the super elitist inner educational system where also Macron is coming from, which is also a product of after the war, is creating these frictions or these tensions in society and is creating this sense of entitlement on the part of the elite. So what I'm reading in this sort of situation is really that this as you say the problem is much much deeper, and the question is how can you find an answer. You say Macron said I can't build a factory for you, but I think what became clear and since the financial crisis is that you have to have an answer to globalization. You can't just say this is a natural law. Yeah. So my question is sort of to shift it a little is, so what is the fascination of the young, for example, with Mélenchon? Is that sort of just, and I want to leave apart the pro-Putin, the pro-Assad, the anti-refugee part, which is disgusting and clearly not any part of the left shouldn't be a part of a left politics. But what is there? Is there somehow, do you have a sense of there is a foundation for something new in which I would hope in this moment of crisis?
Okay, well, you've raised several points there. And first, let me agree with you. When I say the French educational system is good, I mean the elitist part of the educational system, the Grandes Écoles. Polytechnique turns out many superb scientists, mathematicians, and so on, École Normale Supérieure. The vast university system is not so good. There are a few good campuses, but most of the 80 are below par, and the French recognize this. And when I say the EU is the victor, I mean the EU does not face imminent destruction. What it has received from this election and from the Brexit vote is a warning that if it does not reform itself, does not think seriously about the deficiencies in its institutional structure.
With democracy. There's no democracy.
And increasing democratic representation at the top levels of the EU, then yes, it faces serious difficulties ahead. Those are my responses on those points. What does the Mélenchon youth vote represent? Well, the youth vote is very interesting. If you look at the first round youth vote, the preliminary analysis I've seen suggests that it split three ways. One third for Le Pen, one third for Macron, one third for Mélenchon. Fillon got the elderly vote, but not much of the youth vote. The one-third that went to Le Pen was the least educated one-third, the young people with the least healthy prospects for the future, without a buck in many cases, and really the...
Without any school, high school diploma.
The baccalaureate, yeah. Yes, the high school diploma.
Not the buck, not the dollar.
Right. They are the people who are left behind. They're least likely to reap any of the benefits of globalization, of the expanded EU economy. Mélenchon got the youth protest vote. For the most part, people who are still in school, people who have not embarked on their careers, who think more in terms of sweeping away the entire system and starting over something new. This is a romantic revolutionary strain that has persisted in
French, look at me.
In French politics for generations and will not go away. And we have it here in the United States as well.
Parts of Germany, apparently. Very small pockets of
Berlin.
The Macron vote, on the other hand, I think consists largely of people under 30 who have already embarked on their careers, have discovered that out in the real economy, trade-offs have to be made, that you don't get something for nothing, that in order to create jobs, perhaps some of the frictions that exist in the economy that make it that make companies reluctant to hire because the costs of having to downsize after you've already taken on new workers are large, and the frictions, the requirements imposed by French law to go before a court to demonstrate that you're really in financial difficulty and so on are just too onerous for business. So I think a lot of those people are attracted by reforms that have been made in Germany, where there is more cooperation between workers and management, where there's more discussion about what accommodations business needs, what kinds of flexibility are necessary in order to encourage new hiring. This three-way division in the youth vote, I think, is interesting and symptomatic of different analyses, different readings of the French economy. On the one hand, those who have no diplomas are just disgusted with the entire system and want the whole thing to go away. Those who are working towards the diplomas but have not yet started as part of the economy take a more traditional revolutionary idea that if you simply replace the people at the top decision-making is done differently at the government level, then miraculously the economy is going to change. And those in the middle, to whom Macron speaks directly, say we need to make changes in the way business is done. So that's the way I would read the youth vote.
Which is, I guess, I agree, but this poses the question, you have the haves and the have-nots, and the have-nots, I guess, will always be the have-nots in an economy that doesn't create magically new jobs. Right. So is that what the West is willing to live with, that a third of the society is in constant despair or turmoil or upheaval? How can it actually as a society?
Well, I hope not. And when I say that, I hope that the EU has taken a warning from this vote and that the French elite has taken a warning from the widespread rejection of the way it has ruled. I hope that will have an effect. Now, Macron has some positive proposals in this direction. His fundamental educational proposal is to spend more money on the so-called priority educational zones in France, that is, the most economically disadvantaged areas. So he's taking a leaf from the programs pioneered by the late Richard Descoings, who headed Sciences Po, who tried to expand recruitment into this elite institution, which trains France's future leaders, by extending help with the curriculum down into these schools where people don't get that kind of help at home, offering extra tutoring for students who showed some ability to master the material, and trying to increase the number of people from these strata of society who were recruited into an elite institution like Sciences Po. Now, that is a long-term change. It's not going to produce any change overnight. So I think Macron recognizes that that's going to be slow. What can be done to produce more immediate change? One thing that that is part of his program, he's tried to align himself with Scandinavian flex security policies. So one of the ideas there is to provide more substantial support for retraining for people who are laid off from their jobs. Now, that was not very popular with the left-behind people in France, because retraining programs in France have traditionally been unsuccessful and extremely poorly managed and so on. It's not at all clear to me that he's going to be able to make a change there, but I think it's the idea that he has in mind. He often invokes the Scandinavian model as a direction to go. Perhaps he'll be more successful at it than his predecessors.
Yeah, that's interesting for me, coming from Scandinavia or coming from Sweden, because I think when you look closely at the Scandinavian labor market models, they rely heavily also on high degrees of cooperation between, for example, business organizations and labor organizations, trade unions. And so you have this peaceful way of cooperating, right. And this old corporatist ways, right. Where people, and not the French model of conflict, where right. Trade unions, for example, are smaller and weaker, but also much more tend to strike and tend yes. to see politics as their enemy. So I'm just curious about what he means by that, because it's not clear to me that the Scandinavian model at all is possible to, implement in a very different political environment.
Right. The argument about flex security has been going on in France for a long time,
right.
And you've just given the usual arguments against it.
Yeah.
Not only the lack of cooperation between labor and business, but also the fact that Scandinavian society is more homogeneous ethnically. France has a larger percentage of immigrants in the population, and there have been many studies, including by Harvard economists like Alberto Alessina, that show that societies that are more ethnically homogeneous are more willing to fund generously retraining programs and extended unemployment benefits for people who need to make job transitions than economies that are more differentiated.
I think you could argue in the case of Sweden, though, that it's a pretty multicultural society, and you still have these high degrees of trust.
Yeah.
But that's another discussion,
yeah.
I guess.
And it's true that conflict between labor and management in France is endemic, and it's not going to go away overnight. Macron will have to be a great political artist to bring them together. Now, he has proposed a number of reforms that involve more negotiation that has usually gone on between workers and management, and he's proposing to move the negotiations down in level from the branch or sector level of the economy to the firm level. Now, some would say that this weakens the workers' bargaining position because they're left without a national movement to support them and left facing their own management alone. But on the other hand, it might be possible when workers understand more immediately the problems of their own management to get more agreement at that level. Anyway, Macron puts a lot of faith in the ability to foster discussion that has not gone on in the past. Again, this is something that we'll have to wait and see whether he can succeed at this or not.
I think we have a few minutes left, maybe five or so. I have one question about the connection between... So we talked about Macron and we talked about the left. But what does it mean? What does the Le Pen vote mean? And how much is that connected to the Trump? What role did Trump play in the French election? Did he energize the Le Pen vote, or was it did it more energize her enemy, political enemies?
Yeah, I think the latter. The Le Pen vote had been growing for a long time, steadily before Trump arrived. The two things affected the French vote, I think, in the opposite direction from what one might think. The first was the Brexit vote, which brought home to the French, who grumble a lot about the European Union, that grumbling might actually turn into a revolt that would lead to collapse. And when push came to shove, they didn't want to see the end of the European Union. They like to complain about the ways that it limits the freedom of their government, but they don't want to see it disappear. And 70% do not want to see the euro disappear in particular. So that's more than the anti-Le Pen vote, actually. And then Trump's election, Trump being an outspoken critic of the European Union and even worse of NATO, saying that NATO was obsolete, a statement that he since walked back. He said NATO is no longer obsolete, but who knows what he really means.
Yeah.
But I think the effect on Europeans was to concentrate the mind, as a condemned man's mind is concentrated on the gallows, that they might actually be left to fend for themselves against Russia, against whatever is going on in the Middle East, without American support. So they realized that they're going to have to learn how to cooperate with each other, and that the European Union, which had seemed old hat, and you know, the older generation said this is what prevented war. That's probably always been exaggerated. What prevented war was just that Europe was so exhausted from the last war. But now there is some more positive reason to think that the European Union is needed, that cooperation cannot just be set aside and replaced by out-and-out economic competition, which is what would happen if the EU disappeared. So Germany may dominate the EU, but it would dominate even worse, if the even more dramatically, if the EU were to disappear. So I think Trump's election worked against Le Pen. What does the Le Pen vote represent? Well, in part, it's a vote positively for Le Pen, that she offered something different, namely protectionism, exclusion of immigrants, building a wall, all of that sort of thing. But it was also a protest vote against, quote-unquote, the system. All the candidates this year described themselves as anti-system. Le Pen was the most convincingly anti-system candidate. But just as Trump was elected by voters who, according to opinion polls, 35% of those who voted for Trump thought he was not qualified to be president, and they didn't really expect him to win. I think the same was true in France. A lot of people voted for Le Pen because they were disgusted with the status quo, and they did not expect Le Pen to win. The polls reassured them from beginning to end that the vote would be 60-40 against Le Pen. So it was still safe, even though Le Pen has been improving her position steadily. It was still safe, if you want to say, we reject all of you, to vote for Le Pen as the most anti-system candidate.
Are you happy?
I'm happy.
Are you happy with this victory?
So we've had this argument back and forth the last days. I'm not a big fan of Macron. I think he's a classic social democrat to the right, a centrist, as you mentioned earlier. But I've also been thinking about the fact that a year ago everybody knew that this election would be between Le Pen and and Fillon or Sarkozy even.
A year ago, most people thought it'd be Juppé.
Yeah, that's true. But it was supposed to be between the right and the Le Pen. And for me, coming from the left, this is, of course, this is much better. And it's not perfect, but it's better than I thought it would be a year ago. And George is never happy until he's in utopia, so he's not happy.
No. I just want to mention that something that I just remembered. It's still the state of emergency in France. So that is really weird.
And
so
then I would aren't you very happy that you have Macron as president in that situation instead of the other?
I'm just unhappy that there's still the state of emergency I don't think a good reason.
No, that's true. But just that argument.
I agree with you. It's not good reasons, and I hope that Macron will end it soon. Because
it doesn't sound like it.
But let me agree with Karen. I think because a year ago it was.
I knew it.
It was certainly.
That's the last words.
I'm probably even a little more centrist than Karen, although despite supporting Hillary Clinton in the U.S., I still consider myself on the left. But I thought both left-wing candidates in France this year were unacceptable to me.
Amon and Mélenchon.
I did not like.
Why Amon? Very briefly.
Because I thought his economic program was unrealistic. Okay. Mm-hmm. Eco-socialism makes no sense to me. Mm-hmm. Accepting no growth in the future, it's premature to do that. We may arrive.
Premature? Would you have used that word 5 years ago?
No, but
yeah, that's interesting. Premature.
But let me say that a year ago, when it looked as though it'd be between Juppé and Le Pen, I was having this same conversation with all of my friends in France, most of whom are on the left, to one degree or another, and all of them, to a person, said, "We'll vote for Juppé reluctantly, but he's by far the best of the candidates." Then they got Macron, and Macron is far better than Juppé would have been. If you looked at the three right-wing programs of Sarkozy, Fillon, Juppé, you could put them on a grade. Fillon would cut 500,000 civil servants, Sarkozy 300,000, Juppé 150,000. So Macron is going to cut 50,000. He's better than that. And plus more, he has far better growth ideas. They may be insufficient, but they're better than anything Juppé was proposing. The one respect in which you might say he's not as good as Juppé is that he lacks the experience. But maybe that's a good thing. He's not bound by all those previous alliances and assumptions about what can and cannot be done. He's a new guy. Now, he's going to have to learn a lot, but he's very bright. So I'm hopeful. I'm not unreasonably optimistic, I hope, but at least it's not a disaster. And I can see many positive things that might come out of this.
I think this is a day to be happy. For many reasons.
Yeah, I say with our friend Wolfgang Streeck buying time.
I think let's
all open a bottle of champagne for one reason or another. It's always a good reason to have a bottle of champagne open.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for taking your time.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Art Goldhammer. This was Anger Management on the day of the election.
Yes.
Anger Management.
And to our viewers on Facebook.
Yes. Anger Management is a production of Aftenbladet, Nieman Foundation, 60 Pages,
yes,
and Berlin Community Radio. Thank you.